You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation throughout the years here. Great to be on with you.
Last time you had me on, I told you guys were the best in the business, and I really mean that. You know, your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I mean, I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to for good football coverage, elite basketball coverage, and everything recruiting.
You know, I really appreciate you guys, Bison Report, for what you guys do for Bison football.
Here's your host and publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglow.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to an It's Been Too Damn Long edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum. Today we have something very special for you. It's going to feel a little bit thrown together, but that's all right. First up on the docket, our old friend Zach Willis. Both of our guests today come in by phone, just the way it had to be. Zach, first, right here, talking the departure of Tyler Roll, the hire of Jake Landry, and all other things Bison football offseason. Let's go to Zach right now. Bringing on over the phone now, the one and only Zach Willis. It's been too long. Buddy, how are you?
I'm good. We got a lot of catching up to do.
We do, and today is not the day for that. I'm going to warn Bison fans. I told, you know, Zach's busy man. This was sort of a last second thing. I was just kind of going through the archives and just looked and saw, boy, we haven't potted in a minute. And that applies to Nate. You know, no sponsor this basketball season, which probably shouldn't necessarily change how often we pod, but it has certainly slid it down the priority list, which is, I guess, my own fault as a poor salesman. But yeah, we've just got so much. You know, and obviously, like, real life hitting you and Quinn in the face, you know, and me too. Like, it's tough, yeah. But here we are, and not with enough time to discuss everything.
Yeah, sure. Let's get into it.
Speaking of not enough time, I mean, I feel like you and I could do like a 2-hour pod with beers just talking about, you know, the impact that Tyler Roll had on you, on the program, both as a player and a coach, but just kind of your final thoughts on his exit. Kind of how he handled things, how maybe you feel like the school handled things, and just kind of, I guess, what, you know, you happy for him if this is the path that he you know is going for, but I just can't shake the feeling like maybe this wasn't the best thing that could have happened for everyone.
Yeah, obviously I've gotten pretty close to T-Roll after graduation, and there's a lot of feelings and emotions when you start talking about things like promotions at a place where, I mean, you could probably say Tyler helped build, obviously. He gave 15, 20 years of his life to this school, and, you know, not getting the nod, I imagine some logic and some reasoning is hard to put in the back seat when emotions come up, but you know, talking to him and obviously seeing his reaction, it is a cool spot, and the fact that it's Eddie George, and you know, definitely I think we could say a program that has a ceiling that could be raised with the right coaching staff. But on the flip side, just personally, you know, he's a grown man, and I trust that he made the decision that he thinks is best for him professionally. And I hope, obviously, that it works out that way. So I'll be cheering for Tennessee State when they're not playing NDSU this year.
Yeah, I agree. And I just think, you know, and I'm sure Tyler probably grew up idolizing Eddie George, probably played the Madden with Eddie on the cover, you know, like with his buds. I mean, I get that fully. I do. Just, you know, job opportunities that we were aware of or thought we were aware of or had pretty good, you know, idea that are just like on the hierarchy of places that he could go to, even just to get to the next spot,
mm-hmm.
there were better options that we thought we knew about, right? And so
yeah.
that's the tough part where it's like, okay, if there was a if in theory, if there was a Mac OC opening and you know, he kind of hemmed and hawed and took the promotion at NDSU first, it's like, oh man, if he would have just take like if he was gonna go, it would have been cooler if he would have just done that, or potentially better for him if he would have just done that. But again, we don't know these yeah. things for sure. And he the carousel spins in the FCS, like the carousel was almost done spinning. So, you know, there wasn't a ton left, and I'm not trying to dump on Tennessee State. They just program support there is going to be a shocking difference. I've just heard, you know, obviously they're not the biggest game in town. That's the Tennessee Titans. The second biggest game in town is the Vanderbilt Commodores, and the third biggest game in town is the bar scene. And it's, you know what I mean? Like yeah. the Tennessee State,
right.
when he gets down there, you know, people are just not gonna, it's not like Fargo. Okay. And hopefully he can change that culture. He's a culture setter. He's a tone setter. And, mm-hmm. we just obviously wish absolutely nothing but the best for him.
Yeah. I think that's the beauty of, you know, taking a gamble on yourself. I think we've all been in positions where the chips might be stacked against us and you don't know until you do it. I truthfully think it kind of shook out the way you talked about, where kind of after that Christmas break, the promotion came up at NDSU. And then I don't know if those feelings started to creep in again, where it was like, I just need to get out of this place, which, I mean, I'm not going to blame a man for feeling how he's feeling after, you know, what he, I imagine, perceived as, I don't know if disrespect is the right word, or just not getting the nod for something he thought he deserved. And then, like you said, it's pretty slim pickings at the end of this time.
Right.
And yeah, like you said, just I'm hoping that the gamble works out for him, because I care about him as a person and I care about his family more than anything.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Exchanged brief words with Coach, you know, when he left, and just hope that he has absolutely nothing but success. And you know, it won't mean a ton from us, or not especially, like, it means probably something from you, but won't mean a ton from us. But just hopefully he succeeds, you know, like you said, when he's not playing North Dakota State. But and if, you know, being in Nashville long term is like, if that's where he wants to raise his kids, good for him. And if this is like, let's turn around Tennessee State and get to the next thing, I hope he kicks butt at the next thing for sure.
Yep.
All right. Did Tim Pawlak just pull off the greatest troll job in the history of the UND NDSU rivalry?
Yeah, I think he did. It was magnificent to see as it was happening live. I couldn't really believe it and what was going on. I mean,
dude, this was during Rocky's birthday party. And you, by the way, you know who my uncle is. So the conversation, like, nobody cared about the poor kid anymore. Because, like, what just happened?
I mean, Jake Landry obviously announced today officially, but Grand Forks native, I believe, and was a team
Central
captain.
High. He was a knight.
Yeah. Well, now he is the offensive coordinator at North Dakota State, and that's pretty funny.
So, for people, if you're living under a rock, or this is like the only way you take in NDSU content, by the way, we appreciate you big time. But the story here is that Jake Landry, who played football for Grand Forks freaking Central, and then played quarterback at UND at a time where I will say it was kind of tough to play quarterback at UND. They're like losing to Sioux Falls era, you know, days were not great. But he individually, I would say, you know, was a decent enough quarterback. Like, obviously started, you know, 07 to 2010 were just not like bright days for UND football. They just weren't. And yeah. Frankly, not that bright for NDSU football. As you transitioned from like the super fun Steve Walker stuff to eventually what became super fun Brock Jensen stuff, there was kind of some not that fun stuff in the middle. And that's when Jake was at if I write a book, that'll be a long chapter, that stuff in the middle. Jake Landry, you know, I won't call him a UND legend because he probably wasn't that. But, boy, you would think when you cut him, Kelly Green would come out of his veins just like with hometown kid, quarterback, you know, like all that stuff. Released, right. You know, the press release. I'm excited. So 8 days after he takes and I'm going to defend Jake Landry, not because I'm going to have to work with him for the next however long, but I'll say this. So the joke or the funny thing is NDSU just takes UND's offensive coordinator after 8 days. By the way, after I wrote 10 names in a hot board list based on decent information, based on, you know, researching where Tim had been, where other offensive staff members had been, et cetera, et cetera. I said this on Jay Bartley's show. Brother, I could have gotten to 25 names. Jake Landry's name wasn't going to be on there. Yeah. I mean, I would have had, and he'll love this, I would have had Trevor Gebhardt on the OC list before I would have had Jake Landry. Shouts to Trev in the chat.
Yep.
So anyway, let's be very clear, folks. Two things. Number one, and I don't have this 100% nailed down, so I know some of you UND dorks love to listen to this show and, you know, use what we say as like bulletin board material, which is just odd. But anyway, Bubba, I believe, is on an expiring deal. I'm pretty comfortable saying that. I don't know that for sure. I do believe this is the last year of Bubba's contract. That complicates college situations for a number of reasons. Number one, very tough to go recruit. You know, and UND's kind of been, and this is going to sound mean, but it's true, UND has kind of not really been swinging against NDSU and South Dakota State in most of their recruiting battles. You know, they're sort of swinging against USD, and honestly, they're kind of taking like the trying to take the cream of the crop of like the NSIC talent. And I know that sounds mean, but like go look at their signing classes and see where those kids' other offers are from. I'm just telling you what it is. Okay. They're not, if there's a stud in Fargo, I mean, I don't know if the case has been that there's a stud in Grand Forks, but if there's a player that both teams want, he goes to NDSU. It's just kind of the way it is. Okay. So
yeah,
even with that part of it said, it is very hard for Bubba or any of his assistants to go in there and speak with any kind of certainty about this kid's next 4 years when you can't even prove you're under contract for his first year of school. You might not even be there in fall camp. That makes things very complicated. Right. The other thing is just with the obsession that UND people have and their donors have with hockey and the general lack of success of their football program. Their assistant pool is just not even in the ballpark of what it is at North Dakota State. If I were the wide receivers coach at UND, I'd probably be making $55,000 and I'd be making $90,000 at NDSU with a nice little Oxbow Country Club membership. Shout out to Oxbow. And the gap in pay, I would guess, at offensive coordinator is probably pretty similar. I mean, it is. You're not making twice as much, but is it a significant difference in security for your family? So please, please understand that in defense of Jake Landry, but still very funny.
Yeah. I don't think we're being NDSU rubes or homers by saying that career advancement can happen faster at North Dakota State than it can at UND.
100%.
That's the game in college coaching, is climbing the ladder. And if, you know, let's say Coach Landry's here for 1 year, leads us to a national title and scores 45 a game, there's going to be big time schools calling for other positions where I don't know if those things are going to happen in Grand Forks. And all right, let's turn on the Grand Forks UND haters. Would you rather make 55 living in Grand Forks or 90 living in Fargo? I mean, it's a no brainer.
Folks,
I
got to tell you, they put a red pepper right across the street from the Fargo Dome. Ain't no reason to go to Grand Forks anymore.
Yeah.
Boss's Pizza's downtown, Zach.
Yes, it is.
Anyway.
I frequent too often.
I tell you what. Let's talk about Jake Landry, the coach. And I'm gonna say something that's going to maybe sound a little bit mean. And I'm not intending to be mean. But I made this point on Jay's show, you know, earlier in this process, where North Dakota State is really used to a defensive coach that doesn't call plays, because Craig didn't call plays, I don't think, which means I know Chris didn't call plays and I know Matt didn't call plays. So that means that they have had a non-play caller head coach with defensive tendencies since Bowles' first year in 04, 03?
Sure.
Now, Tim, I'm almost certain, is not going to call the plays. He said he was going to let or have Tyler call the plays. I would assume things are the same with Jake. There'd been no reason to talk to Tim since, you know, some of these hires, though, I would guess, as the staff gets finalized, like, you know, we had a chance to talk to Noah Pauley. We had a chance to talk to A.J. Blazek. We had a chance to talk to Dave Braun when all those hires were made. I would guess that there's going to be some sort of an availability here coming up quickly.
Yeah.
But we don't know. The point that I'm trying to make is Tim Polasek is an offensive head coach who has called plays here and called plays last year at Wyoming. I'm not saying he's going to call the plays, but it is very possible that bringing in a younger head coach, or excuse me, a younger OC with maybe a little bit more to prove, is more not about Tim being bossy or Tim overpowering him, but Tim kind of being like, okay, this is kind of how I want to do our offense. Let's work on this together. Whereas I think Tim, if it would have been Tyler and Randy, it would have been like, yeah, I'm just going to kind of be the CEO and let you guys run the show. And now I think he'll be more in the kitchen, cooking it up, right? Like I think Polasek and Landry can be more of a team, whereas I think Tim would have just stayed the hell out of Tyler's way for the most part. And now, obviously, the head coach is the final, you know, say-so. But I think this has an opportunity for Landry to not necessarily be weaker, but be in a situation where, like, Polasek is kind of buying the groceries a little bit. Maybe, you know, he's making the salad. He's bringing out the breadsticks, and Jake can still, you know, bring you the steak and potatoes, but Tim's also in the kitchen. I got so lost with this analogy.
I totally get what you mean. I mean, you even think about, like you said, Tyler and Randy with that current staff, how it would have been assembled. I mean, those are guys that have proven that, you know, they can do it the way they're doing it correctly. And I think Jake Landry obviously comes in with a pretty decent resume. I think he led the whatever league St. Thomas was in last year in points per game. So he obviously knows how to put points on the board. But like you said, it could be one, more collaborative, two, kind of taking him under his wing and molding him professionally, which I think obviously matters to everybody in that situation. But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely going to be interesting to see the dynamic versus, like you said, I think it would have been more of a CEO position if Coach Roll had stayed.
I agree. I am interested to see, because, like, Bison fans have just always, and I think it's a lot of fans, have just been tough on the offensive coordinator. Like, the same people that yelled at Tyler used to yell at Polasek, who used to yell at Brent Vegan before. This guy's a UND quarterback. People are going to yell if things go bad with Jake Landry.
I think it also just works out too that they've obviously crossed paths professionally. I think they coached together at Northern Illinois too, so they're obviously familiar. It's not like Coach Polasek just saw that hire and then went to Grand Forks and, you know, stuffed him in the back of his car and took him to Fargo. They obviously know each other, and, you know, if this came open, you would have had to think that Landry was on Polasek's short list right away.
Yeah. Despite, like I said, my ability to identify that short list. Our boy had a chance to have a beverage with him down in Orlando at the Pop-Tarts Bowl. By the way, we could do a whole podcast on just my experience of the Pop-Tarts Bowl, as I didn't realize that I was in, like, amongst one of the biggest viral moments of the college football season. It all seemed very cool, but then I got back to my hotel room and saw, like, Twitter, and I was like, oh, my God. Anyway... Yeah. Devin Kleiman, how close were you in? Did you play against Devin Kleiman when he was at Shanley? How close are we on the age scale there?
So Devin's a year older, but they were 2A when we were 3A, so we didn't play each other on the football field. But Devin was obviously an assistant on the team when I was at NDSU.
Sure. So just kind of your insight into him. You know, I mentioned this before. you know, and I get it, right? So, like, the nepotism word will get thrown around with Devin, okay? And I just want to be like, who do you think Kyle Shanahan's dad is? Who do you think Sean, who do you think Sean McVay's grandpa is? Do you think Wade Phillips learned football from Bum Phillips or no? Like, who, yet, growing up in football is going to give you a leg up in understanding football. I understand that he got, you know, not every kid just gets to GA at Kansas State. Okay, there are other coaches that would, you know, cut off a finger to have the opportunity that Devin had, but, like, that's just how ball is. I'm sorry. And yes, there are awesome stories like Mike McDonald, who was like a high school assistant 7 years ago and is now the head coach of the Seattle Seahawks. That stuff is very cool. But pretending Devin doesn't know ball because his dad is a coach is odd. So I'm just kind of defending, I guess, somebody no one's attacking right now. But your thoughts on thoughts on Klieman.
Well, yeah, and just to add on to that, too, it's not his fault his dad is Chris Klieman. And if he wasn't good at what he was doing, Chris wouldn't have had him around. I can promise you that. Devin is going to be awesome because, one, he's 25, 26 years old, going to bring just that young man juice into the room that I think will be good. And, two, he's worked under, one, his dad, who is one of the smartest football people I've ever met, and then under Joe Klanderman, who I think is possibly the smartest football person I've ever met.
Dude, Joe's crazy.
Like, he's just bringing in that experience and obviously very intelligent. And then working with Gio, too, who's going to be calling the shots on defense now. I think there's a cool symbiotic relationship happening on the defensive side of the ball as far as getting everybody on the same page and having the same philosophy. I kind of feel like that Code Green establishment is going to come back again this year.
Yeah, I'm going to let you go. I've already gone way past the time that, you know, the time constraints we already talked about. But let's just close. And I know, you know, Will Johnson, the corners coach, we haven't really got into. We don't know that much, you know, so that's why we haven't gotten into it a ton. But I think at mid-major ball, your kind of concern, I guess, would be losing coaches. And maybe younger coaches are, I guess, more likely to go, but this staff is going to be young, man, and that's exciting. I was joking, like, Gazer's going to feel 1,000 on that defensive staff, and Nick is not that old of a guy, but, like, Klieman, Johnson, Gio is like 32 as the defensive coordinator. There are some young bucks on this defensive staff, and if there's one thing that Tim Polasek is about, it's the juice.
Yeah, and it feels like, I don't know, it just feels, even talking to my fellow BFPA guys and former players and even my dad, people in the community who are Bison fans, you obviously can't sit here and not coach Entz for what he did. I think he lost like 11 games in his career coaching. But it just feels like there's a buzz in the air, a level of excitement that's back for this fall. And, you know, this weather right now has me itching for it to be fall camp already. I'm ready to go.
All right, brother. Studio soon. Studio soon. We have something potentially super fun in the works if a former NDSU defensive end would ever answer his phone. I'm going to let that one go at that. But potentially something super fun in the works for folks. So there's a little teaser for all of you.
Yeah.
And we will catch you later, buddy. Let's break bread soon. I miss you.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. See you, Zach.
Yeah.
All right. We want to thank Zach for making time. The boys here at Bison Report. And finally, heading out to Wisconsin to connect with Nate Zascher to discuss NDSU's road victory over South Dakota State in Frost Arena for the first time in a very, very long time. Getting past the frost treatment, getting past that frost whistle. Nate Zastro breaking down all things Bison Jacks and previewing Saturday's big-time Summit League showdown in Grand Forks between the Fighting Hawks and the Bison. Okay, bringing on Mr. Nate Zastro, our men's basketball analyst here at Bison Report. Nate, how the heck are you, buddy?
We're doing well. It's always good to be on a show after a Bison victory, let alone one at Frost Arena against the Jacks. So hopefully that team can get a couple more wins here and carry some momentum forward into Sioux Falls.
Yeah, speaking of Sioux Falls, looks like we're going to have the most entertaining tournament that we've had in a while. None of these teams seem to be willing to take hold. You know, NDSU with a win over UND could be right back in the thick of the actual race right after they were 2-4. I mean, that's how crazy this league is. But they're kind of beating themselves into submission in the sense that there's a real good chance the Summit Champ's going to be a 16 seed. I don't know that I foresee, you know, a 13 or a 14 out of the Summit League just because non-conference wasn't that impressive. And no one is going 16-2. I mean, the winner of this league might be 13-5, 12-6. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I haven't looked at the BPI or RPI or whatever they use nowadays, and I think it could be play-in game too. I mean, there was a Wright State team coming out of the Horizon a few years ago, maybe it was even last year, that was in that play-in game. And I think with where the league's at, you got UND and SDSU at the top at 5-3, and their records, I mean, SDSU's 12-11. I mean, it's going to be a team that's going to be a few games over 500, it seems like, which is most likely headed to the play-in game.
Yeah, I think there's a real good chance that happens, and I think there's every chance that it's North Dakota State. I mean, the way that they play in Sioux Falls, they've certainly been bigger underdogs than this. Like, I'd say this is a pretty flat league, and for whatever reason, Dave's got magic down there, but it's a long way away. We're certainly future casting. Last night is just a win that they needed. You know, I thought really had a chance to turn the season around at St. Thomas, up 9 really, really late in the first half, and that's one thing I wanted to, and I was researching before we went on the air. So listen to this, Nate. In their 4 losses, conference losses, NDSU was up 26-18 at home over USD at the under 12 in the first half. And I know that's the under 12 in the first half, but they actually were up like 12-2 or 12-5 early in that game too, and then just let Caleb Stewart go nuts. And that happens, whatever. At Omaha, they were up 75-68 with 6 minutes left. That's tough. Home against Denver, up 64-60 with 4 minutes left. That's tough. And then, like I said, they're at St. Thomas, up 9 with 18 seconds left in the first half and give up an uncontested 3 to the hottest guy on St. Thomas's team. I mean, I'm not saying, oh, this team should be undefeated in league play, but boy, I mean, they really have not gotten their butts kicked. And I think the whole league is kind of flat, right? But like, this has been a very painful and frustrating team to watch because you can feel that it's there.
Yeah, and when you mentioned it last night with you're mad about the St. Thomas loss, and I was just thinking back, like, I don't think they've been up or in every conference game to where they've had a lead, whether it was a big lead in the first half or a lead late, and you just hit the nail on the head with all those scores. I mean, they legitimately could be at the top of the conference, and hopefully last night is a sign of things to come going forward where they can close these games out. And like you talked about, you go get a win in Grand Forks, you have 5 home games and 3 road games left in conference play, and you're possibly a game from first place for a regular season title. And that seemed to be so out of the question after the start. But with everyone beating up on each other, I mean, this conference race could go any which way right now.
I'm going to read something to you, and I just want to get your take because one of my finest memories of Bison basketball was your performance in Frost Arena. This is long before you and I were friendly, but just a tremendous thing to watch. So listen to this, Nate. This will not come to any surprise to you. 4:01 left. Jakari White bangs a 3. They tie the game, they being NDSU. Here are the next possessions till the end of the game for South Dakota State. Foul, Zeke Mayo goes to the free throw line. Zeke Mayo misses a 3. Zeke Mayo turns it over. But then foul. Zeke Mayo goes to the free throw line. 1:49 left. Foul. Zeke Mayo goes back to the free throw line. Foul. Zeke Mayo goes to the free throw line. Zeke Mayo turns the ball over. Zeke Mayo bangs a 3. That's how the under 4 went. For the Bison.
I think he only had a couple free throw attempts going into the last 4 minutes. I mean, I put it on Twitter. I think he was 7 for 8 in the last 4 minutes.
Yeah.
And ended up with 14 free throw attempts for the game.
And some of the times just bullying Damari Wheeler Thomas, who's significantly smart. I would have put DeSette on Mayo and just shut that down. I also, and I'm going to ask Dave about this. He's probably going to yell at me. I would have fouled Zeke Mayo with 7 seconds left and made him shoot 2 free throws and tried to do something dumb. And I'm a big foul up three late guy. That's not just because he banged a three in Damari's face. Like, I would have sent him to the free throw line and made them do something dumber than just, you know, the conference player of the year jacking up a three over a 5'11" point guard. But yeah, you're exactly right. Incredibly inefficient game for Mayo. He had 35 points on 23 shots, but when the officials grab your hand and walk you to the free throw line, you can get 35 points going 9 of 23 from the field.
Yeah, and I think the most frustrating thing is last year was kind of the same story. I think NDSU was up late, and he shot a bunch of free throws late in the game, and it seemed like the same story that we were going through last year. Granted, this year we ended up getting the win. The following up three, I think it's time and situation. 10 seconds left. You clearly, I wouldn't let Zeke Mayo cross me over 4 times and then get into a rhythm off a dribble into a three. I would have at least sent some type of double team and make someone else hit the shot. I didn't see anyone near him. It seemed like he had the right wing cleared off and kind of rocked Damari to sleep and just shot over him. And in that situation, once that clock gets to 3-4 seconds, I would have taken the foul. The thing you worry about is obviously the offensive rebound, but like you saw, obviously in the Minnesota-Wisconsin game, Wisconsin followed up three, and Minnesota gets the offensive rebound. The team still has to get the offensive rebound. They still have to put it in the basket. There's just a lot of things that have to go wrong for you not to get that rebound on following up three. But it ended up working out in overtime, and granted, Feddersen had got to use his length and get that tip in. But I thought Bolden also had a really good look for the win as well.
Yeah, he got a decent look. Big game from Bowden. He was inefficient from the field as well. But, man, 14, 11, and 6, that's big-time stuff. That's filling up the stat sheet. You know, basically playing power forward and multiple times, you know, playing post-defense on because South Dakota State's a too big team. I mean, Will Kyle is an animal and is really, really athletic. I know he's only 6'9", say only, but, like, he's a big. He's not a wing. Okay. They're not doing 4 wings around the big. They're a too big team. And the way that NDSU was able to, you know, kind of handle and keep Apple and Kyle to 22 points, that was big because, you know, Mayo had to do everything offensively. And I actually thought, wow, South Dakota State was a 9.5 point favorite last night. Oh my goodness. Tough scene. Anyway. Yeah. So I guess what I was saying is, to limit those guys to 22, it forced Mayo to be the guy. And I actually kind of think Mayo's not very good defensively. He's not very good defensively, or he has to carry so much offensive load that there's just none left. I mean, there was one time Jakari just cooked him. I mean, just drove right past him, and it didn't look like the effort was there. But when you're playing 44 minutes and you're taking 23 of your team's 66 shots, That's a tough ask, right? To go then play defense on the other side.
And apart from those shots, he's driving and barreling into the lane, using energy, doing that, and going to the free throw line for 14 more free throws. So, especially late, I mean, he's looked on to carry a lot of their workload. I mean, I don't think guys like Easley kind of feed off him. Guy like Mims isn't really a scorer. And yeah, they go into the post, and Apple's been kind of a Bison killer. I mean, last year he was obviously hurt, but the year before that, he had some big games against NDSU. And I think that's what's going to hurt SDSU in needing to win 3 games in 3 days, is they look upon Mayo for so much of their scoring and their distributing and all that stuff, that it's going to make it tough on him if he has to play 120 minutes in 3 days.
I tell you what, man, and I'm not trying to be mean. If Zeke Mayo turns an ankle, South Dakota State's going to be very difficult for them to win a game in this league, a game. Like, I'm even looking at the bottom of the standings there at South USD, who obviously has a win over NDSU. I don't know who you. Who, I don't know who in this league South Dakota State is beating if Zeke Mayo turns an ankle. Anyway,
And it's really good from top to bottom. I mean, USD's got some pieces that can score the ball. They've obviously disappointed a little bit, but they can still beat anyone on any given night as well.
I mean, they won in Fargo. That's no small thing. That's, you know, I mean, it's no small thing. Okay, let's talk freshman. Want to talk freshman. Last night, 22 minutes from DeSette. He's their most athletic defender. He's probably just their best athlete, period. 60% from the field, had a rebound, had an assist, had a steal. Nothing crazy, but it's interesting to see his role expand. And then Noah Feddersen, man, 18 against ORU, 20 against St. Thomas. And he's super efficient too, right? I mean, 64% from the field against ORU, 88% from the field against St. Thomas, which is not probably sustainable. But then again, 60% from the field against South Dakota State in a win. They've got something special in this kid. He certainly accomplishes things differently than Grant. I don't think he's the NBA / transfer portal prospect that Grant is, but boy, he is coming into his own, and I think is a lock. I don't know if there is an all-freshman team, but I think he's still an all-lock for a all-newcomer spot, even as many of these summit teams that are heavy on the transfers.
Yeah, and it's an all-newcomer team, but, I mean, just look at the transfers from other teams. I don't see how you keep him off it because, I mean, they're just looking at conference play, and he's been – coming along really good, I would say, almost the past month here. And it's good to see his skill set. I mean, he came in with, 6'11", skinny as ever, and used his redshirt year, really got his body a little bit, looking a little bit better, able to take the brunt of stuff down low. Obviously has learned how to use his length really, really well and can shoot it. I mean, that's what you're looking for. I don't think he'll ever have the ball-handling ability that Grant had, and I don't think we want to compare him to someone like that so soon. But if he stays that efficient, he's going to be great, great guy to have once NDSU gets, I mean, Wheeler Thomas is a junior now, just for someone to distribute the ball to, and then it's going to be fun to play with for the guards.
You know, they got a game tomorrow against UND. Really interested in kind of what's going on there with UND. I look at their schedule and, you know, they obviously take a huge backseat to hockey, gave up 110 to Iowa. But you look at, you know, some like common opponents, right? And NDSU being able to beat Portland while UND not, you know, able to do that. Then they just get absolutely bludgeoned at home by St. Thomas. They get killed by the Rabbits, and they frankly get killed by Omaha. Then something happens in Kansas City where UND wins that game by 13. Then they beat Oral Roberts by 10. Then they beat Denver by 14. Then they win in St. Paul by 10. Granted, I mean, I think the Tommies, you know, kind of shot a lot of energy beating the Bison there, but a 14-point win in Verm, what's going on? Because as far as I could tell early in the season, you know, I was not really impressed by anything that these guys were doing, UND was doing. I mean, I guess a win over Eastern Michigan, meeting a MAC team is cool, but, you know, losing to Fullerton by 10, losing to Riverside by 6, losing to Portland. I didn't see what there was to be, you know, excited about. And then, man, losing the first two Summit League games by a combined 34 points, I don't understand how we got to the point where, you know, UND is in first place in the league. How did we get here?
Yeah, and I talked to you a little bit earlier in the year. I said, I mean, they were a much improved team just kind of watching their roster. They got some good competitors, got some good returners. The BJ Ahmed kid has played really well recently here. And it's a team that kind of was confusing because they ended up winning a couple games, non-conference. Then they stink at the start of the conference season. You're like, what the heck's going on? And now they go and get some really good wins and really good road wins here. I don't think they've been as good at home, which is a little bit surprising. Most teams have a better home record. NDSU's obviously had some success against UND in the past few years and a big rivalry game, and hopefully we could carry some momentum and they had a big win in Vermilion last night, but they're still traveling back here now, what, 5-6 hours today, maybe even a little bit more. And with a travel day and getting ready to play at home. So both teams coming back from a road trip with an hour drive in between them, and hopefully NEC's ready to go. I think it's a big rivalry game. If they can get that road win, I think it sets up very good for them to finish out here the last month.
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, for sure, and we'll let you go here, but I cannot express, and Dave Richmond has been unbelievable in Grand Forks, absolutely unbelievable. His record up there is very, very impressive. Thin team, and they got kind of a weird deal with Iheanacho when the NCAA was just like, yeah, whatever, transfer as many times as you want. Like, Tyree should have had to sit out this year. And, you know, if he's on the team, like, you look at this win at USD, a 14-point win, and they played seven guys. So they're really thin. And, you know, King comes off the bench, had 24 minutes last night, and then Brady Danielson is somehow still at UND and still not being very productive, but he comes in with 19. Omot plays almost the whole game. Sartzize plays almost the whole game. But they got efficient shooting from Eagle Staff. They got, you know, high quality basketball from Iheanacho. It's an interesting group. And as you can see, you know, they can get blown out and they can blow teams out. So, you know, I would say NDSU is probably not the favorite up in Grand Forks. Same as I would say UND probably won't be favored in Fargo, but boy, if the Bison can go 2-0 in Brookings and in Grand Forks, even that conference record at 4-4, as you said, the schedule heats up for them as far as hosting games. And I think you could really see NDSU make a run at being towards the top of the league and avoiding having to play on Sunday down in Sioux Falls. I don't know that the league championship is necessarily within their grasp, but things would really, really shake out, you know, or could shake out differently if they can find a way to win that game in Grand Forks.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you got two home games, maybe even three home games straight coming up here against teams that I think Omaha is one of them, and you need some revenge there. And it's all games that the ones that they've lost, they've had leads in, like comfortable leads in, that they just weren't able to finish games out. So big matchup Saturday, and hopefully NDSU is ready to roll. And like we've talked about, it'd be a huge, huge win to get up to that top 1-2 spot, which is a huge advantage getting that extra day off in Sioux Falls.
Absolutely. All right, Nate, we will we'll catch you later. Thank you so much for your time, and get safely back to school. We'll see you, buddy. All righty. We want to thank Nate. We want to thank Zach. We want to thank all of you wonderful people for listening to this here show. Have a phenomenal weekend, everybody. Go Bison.